This is the Medical Beat on 97.1 FM Talk.
Good morning. This is the Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. We're going to have a great show this morning. This is just a great day to be social distancing yourself at home, in a room, by yourself, listening to the radio. So thank you very much for inviting us into your ears. And we're going to have a great show today. We're going to talk about, among other things, we're going to talk about the opioid epidemic, which has been sweeping the nation for quite a while. And we have two leading experts on the opioid epidemic in our studio today. So this is going to be a really great show today. Let's go ahead and do those introductions here. So first we have Dr. Arturo Taca. Dr. Taca is board certified in both general psychiatry and in addiction medicine, and he runs the Synergy Alcohol and Drug Rehabilitation Program here in St. Louis. And next we have Ashley Hawker, who has been, what are you, Ashley? What's your title?
Director of Operations.
Yeah, that. Director of Operations for the Synergy Alcohol and Drug Rehabilitation Programs. So she has seen things that you would probably not even believe if she told you. It's a lot of stuff. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Kind of at the end, we'll have a little bit about the coronavirus. We're going to talk about that too. And for those of you who are longstanding listeners, just a little reminder that this show is an extension of Ion Health. So this is basically still the Ion Health show, just except for the parts that aren't the same, and we're on a little, kind of like the Ion Health show on steroids or something like that. So it's still us, but now we are the Medical Beat. Thanks for joining us, 10 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays. But back to the opioid epidemic. So we're going to talk about a lot of different things about the opioid epidemic. We're going to talk about why is it such a big thing? Why is it a thing now, much more so than in the past? How do people get into that mess? And what can they do to get out of it? And what can you do if you or a loved one is suffering from opioid dependence? So let's start with, and let me toss this question over to Ashley here. So one thing I'm wondering that I think a lot of other people might be wondering too is, I guess the story is different for everybody, but how is it that people get stuck in being dependent on opioids, on heroin, on OxyContin, on fentanyl, or whatever? How do people get into that? How does that, what's a typical story, or how does that happen?
Well, I think that there are a few different kinds of stories, kind of different categories, if you were. One of them being that they started on prescription painkillers. Maybe the risks of said painkillers were not explained to them to the fullest, not understanding that they were kind of starting a scenario that would lead to dependence, either an injury or that they had some sort of chronic pain in the first place. Some of it is also, I'm starting to see in our practice that there's just not this danger that we're seeing for these younger kids. They're not this fear that was maybe a little bit more readily available years ago. And it's not as taboo as it used to be that there were use of painkillers or heroin. I mean, we have patients that come in and there isn't this jump from opiate painkillers to heroin. You know, you're talking about 15, 16, 17-year-olds that are just going right into using heroin without a kind of a bridge.
So there's less of a stigma and they're jumping into it, and so more of them are dying.
And unfortunately, the reality is that what's available now is much more powerful, and so the intervention has to be, you know, a lot faster than it has been in the past.
Because they get hooked stronger and they get hooked worse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the risk of overdose is so significant as well.
Right. Oh, that's scary stuff. So So Dr. Taka, how about what is it about opioids that make them so addictive? Why do people get hooked on those so badly?
Well, the opioids that includes pain medications, heroin, and fentanyl, they elicit a response that results in a kind of a euphoric feeling.
Yeah.
Just to point out, the 80% of heroin users had a problem with prescription pain meds. So a lot of the people who get hooked onto heroin are exposed to prescription pain meds.
So the prescription pain meds a lot of times are sort of the on ramp for heroin.
Most of the time for heroin, and there's been a change too. Prescription pain meds is the first wave of the opiate crisis, and then heroin came along, replaced the pain medications. Now we're transitioning to the third wave of the opiate epidemic, and we're seeing more synthetic opioids. These are more powerful. They're synthetic forms of opioids. Fentanyl is about 100 times more, 100 to 1,000 times more than morphine. And then we have this thing called carfentanil. This is the one that everybody's talking about. You touch it and you can overdose, and those are sometimes 10,000 times more powerful than morphine.
That's like science fiction stuff there.
Scary stuff.
So it's carfentanil? Is that a metabolite of fentanyl?
Once upon a time, it was used as an elephant tranquilizer, and there's no human use for that. So
really?
You get these synthesized in labs out of the country, from China, things like that.
I guess a person's just like a very small elephant.
Some people may be.
I think, yeah. Wow. Okay. Dang. Okay. So there's fentanyl, carfentanil, and some other synthetic opioids, which are very, at least as far as how powerful per gram or whatever.
Yes.
They're very,
milligram,
very strong.
Microgram.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very powerful.
Wow.
Small doses.
Yeah. So when someone gets hooked on these, I guess a lot of times it takes a while for them to figure out that something's wrong or that they've got a problem.
Well, sometimes it's the first dose and they're looking for heroin. They buy it and they overdose and they wake up and they're like, wow, what was that? And oftentimes it's not heroin. It's fentanyl or carfentanil.
If they survive, yes.
Yeah. We're seeing lots of overdoses as people are currently using because of these strong synthetic opioids. Before, we used to see patients overdose while they're sober and they have low tolerance after they've detoxed or they're trying to get sober.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're seeing overdoses while people are currently using.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And once someone is really hooked badly on these opioids, what are the things that makes it so hard for them to stop? Why is it that so many people get trapped and can't stop?
Well, like a lot of chemical addictions, substance use issues, you have brain changes and things change in the brain. If you drink too much alcohol every day, things change in the brain. If you use too much benzodiazepine, you have tolerance and withdrawal. Same with opioids.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When you bathe the brain with opioids, things happen. When you take it away, you go through a withdrawal.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's very uncomfortable. You have things that are similar to the flu, the diarrhea, the chills and everything. And the only thing that makes it go away is using more opioids. So it's very hard to break from the cycle.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And it seems like people who have their brains bathed in opioids or other things like alcohol or whatever, sometimes they don't see the obvious. You know, everyone around them is like, oh my gosh, you're going to die if you keep doing this.
And we always refer to the lizard brain, the wizard brain. Everybody's got lizard brains and wizard brains, and the lizard brain is in charge. The wizard brain doesn't really know what's going on.
Yeah. So wizard brain and lizard brain.
That's right.
And in the summer, it's blizzard brain.
Oh,
I guess. So Carl is signaling me that we must go out on break, and we're going to talk more about the opioid epidemic, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
We're back. This is The Medical Beat. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. We have Dr. Art Taka, and we have Ashley Hawker here as our guests. And we have Carl on the board. Hey, say hi, Carl.
Hi, Carl.
Good morning, everyone.
Oh, you're talking to me.
You can say hi. I will answer to everyone.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So we're all here back in the studio, doing our social distancing thing, at least several feet between each of us here.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
20 seconds.
Wash your hands.
I made sure that everyone washed their hands before they came in the studio today.
That sounds good.
Yes, we did.
That sounds good. And we said, Carl, don't hug us. I know you want to, but don't hug us. All right.
Thank you, Doc.
you're quite welcome. Okay. There's a lot of things we want to talk about. We're going to talk about the opioid epidemic. But before we talk about some of the statistics associated with that, something I want to know is what up with this Kratom thing? I keep seeing these billboards, what CBD and Kratom, and I think Kratom is some kind of opioid. So can you tell us about that, Ashley? What up with Kratom?
Yeah. So Kratom has a lot of different legislation along with it, as well as some of these new hypes and advertisements. So it's being kind of advertised as a way to naturally help with your pain. The challenge is that it stimulates that opiate receptor. Mm-hmm. So it's giving you some of the same euphoric, while a mild version than an OxyContin or a heroin. It is still stimulating that part of your brain, which means that there is going to be withdrawal if you are using that on a regular basis and discontinue it, similar to an OxyContin or heroin. It's also important to note that if you are trying to stop using Oxy and heroin, that you understand that that's still going to be triggering that part of your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 So Kratom is basically, it's very much an opioid, but sort of like a weaker version of an opioid. So, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And so with just the opioid epidemic in general, how many people is this affecting? How many people are dying from this? How bad is this? And how has it?
Yeah.
And also, right after that, I'm going to ask, how has it evolved over the years?
So it's early 2020. 2019 stats haven't come out yet, but we have stats from 2017 and 18. And what it looks like, there had been a gradual increase in overdose deaths up mm-hmm. until 2017. Mm-hmm. Close to 70,000 people were dying every year from illicit drug overdoses, including opioids.
70,000?
Close to 70,000, yeah, going up every year. Now we saw a dip, a small dip for the first time in several years.
Oh.
So what we're seeing is a dip in overdose prescription opioid deaths.
Uh-huh.
And but we've seen an increase in a specific type of opioid, the synthetics. So now we're seeing less heroin overdose and more kind of synthetic overdose. And we're also seeing a big upsurge in methamphetamines.
What
we have in place, the prescription monitoring laws in most states except Missouri,
uh-huh.
Better pain management practices, mm-hmm. I guess awareness and access to treatment. We're seeing a decrease in opiate overdoses with prescription drugs.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But people who are dependent or addicted to these opioids are looking for other sources. So the supply is now replaced with more potent opioids. And that's where the fentanyl and the carfentanil story starts.
Okay. And I guess that with that potent stuff at a low price, that free market at work there.
Yeah,
yeah.
So things are working. I think doctors are being a little bit more careful about how they prescribe these mm-hmm. Medications and looking for other options to treat chronic pain.
Uh-huh.
But there's still a lot of people running around looking for a dose out there, and this is what's in the supply right now.
Yeah. So I guess a lot of people with a pretty big percentage of people with addiction problems now, it is opioids.
Yes. And what's concerning is we're seeing a lot more methamphetamines.
Oh, meth.
Yeah. With these opioids.
Yeah.
And we don't have FDA treatments for these methamphetamines. We do have for opioids. We've got several medication-assisted therapies we'll talk about later that can help people get off opioids.
Yeah. And I would definitely want to talk about that pretty soon. Yeah. But it's kind of interesting how addictions have changed over the years. I remember when I was a medical student and a resident, it was mostly people with crack. I mean, it was crack cocaine back then.
Right.
And then, you know, later on it was meth and now it's opioids.
It goes in waves.
It goes in waves.
Yeah. We see the crack crisis and then people started liking the sedatives and then now the stimulants are coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the club drugs for a while.
Right.
There's a lot of choices.
Yeah, keeps changing.
Yeah.
Keeps changing. And now it's the opioids, which are particularly evil.
Yeah.
In their own
And now
way.
We've got the marijuana story, which we can put a whole show together for that.
Oh, I think we will.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's do that in the future. So, yeah. But so with opioids, and we've got just a little bit of time left before the break, but... Can you tell us a little bit about the, I'll throw this one to Ashley here, for Ashley to start on this one, but can you tell us a little bit about the treatment options for if someone is hooked on opioids, what are some of the options to unhook them? How do we make them better?
So the first thing is that we have to get them to detox. And there are definitely different ways and different approaches that people can do that. Mm-hmm. The reality is that opiate withdrawal symptoms are generally not life-threatening, with a couple of exceptions, the biggest one being dehydration or people that have an underlying medical issue like hypertension or diabetes.
Oh, yeah.
Aside from that, generally it's not life-threatening, which means that in lots of fluids and rest and getting through that. The biggest risk associated with it is if you're not successful at getting through that and you kind of go to use and have an overdose.
Yeah.
So it's really important that once you kind of start down that path that you really seek medical attention and get you the support that you need to be successful. Yeah. There are different approaches. So there are medications that can help with withdrawal. There are different tapers that physicians can help with. There are even comfort meds. And sometimes there are even devices that can help with those withdrawal symptoms that can reduce them.
Yeah. And I've seen one of those in action. Can you tell us a little bit about the gizmo, about the device?
Yeah. So the device has the capacity to take down withdrawal symptoms on average 85% within 30 minutes, which if anybody's ever been through opiate withdrawal symptoms, it sounds like I'm selling you snake water.
Yeah. Oil.
Oil, yeah.
Oil, water, whatever.
Snake water is even more than... Yeah.
Snake blood.
But it works. Yeah. People are very uncomfortable, and the biggest thing between the difference between the flu versus... opiate withdrawal symptoms are very much the same, except for this overwhelming anxiety and fear that you're going to die.
Yeah.
And so this device can alleviate some of the symptoms as well as that anxiety by calming the brain and making those brain changes that Dr. Taka was talking a little bit about earlier.
Yeah. I've seen people do that, even though drug abuse is not my specialty as a psychiatrist. I've certainly seen people withdrawing from opioids They kind of feel like they have the flu and they kind of feel like they're going to die. It's for some of them, they kind of have this irrational fear of withdrawal, oh my gosh, I can't do this. And
it's very, very irrational. It's lizard brain driven.
Lizard brain driven. So a lot of the idea here is to help them get comfortably off of opioids. And then we're running up against a break here. So we'll talk about what we do after that. So we get them off of opioids in the short run, and then I guess you have to get them
treatment yeah.
to stay off of opioids in the longer run. And we're going to talk about that. So we'll be right back in just a few moments. This is The Medical Beat. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey, and we'll be back. We're back. Thanks for being back here with us. This is The Medical Beat, formerly known as the Ion Health Show. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey, and we are talking about the opioid epidemic. Unlike that other epidemic, the opioid epidemic has been with us for years and has been a pretty terrible thing. We're here talking with Dr. Arturo Taka and Ashley Hawker from InSynergy, which is an alcohol and drug treatment program here in St. Louis, Missouri. And a lot of what they see is opioid addiction, heroin, fentanyl, OxyContin, all of those things. And what we just talked about is getting people off of opioids in the short run because they face a lot of problems with withdrawal. So they need medical supervision and some other things in order to help get them through withdrawal. So let's talk about this. Once someone with an opioid problem has gotten off of opioids in the short run, let's say it's been a few days since they've used, uh-huh. they're over their withdrawal. So that means they're cured, right?
Oh yeah. Perfect. Okay. They're perfect.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
No.
So they're actually not.
Tell us
why not, and tell us what can we do. What can be done to try to keep them better?
Right. So detox is not treatment. So it's oftentimes the first step, but there's a lot of hard work after detox. And because there are brain changes that occurs during time when you're using opiates for a long time, you have to kind of respect those brain changes because, again, the lizard brain is still kind of in control.
Right. Lizard brain and wizard brain.
We got to give the wizard brain back, we got to get them back to being in power again because, you know, that lizard brain will mislead us and make us do a lot of goofy stuff.
Lizard brain wants drugs.
Right. So, yeah, it's the limbic system, actually. We call it the limbic system. And the cortex is the big wizard brain we refer to. And they actually talk to each other with connections. So what we do after detox is there, first of all, if you are struggling and you get, you're off, you have to really seriously consider getting professional addiction treatment. There are a lot of people in town that have certifications, been trained. Oftentimes doing it alone can get you so far. So search for somebody who's got training. Right now, there are it is standard care that that we offer medication assisted therapies to keep people from relapse. Mm-hmm. So there are a few different medications that are FDA approved, and we'll go through a few of them. The first one is an old drug called methadone, and you're basically replacing the old illegal drug with a replacement opioid, and it's got some advantages because it's longer acting and it's been around. We've got a long history relationship with methadone. It's considered safe and standard of care in pregnancy. After that, another drug called buprenorphine was developed, and that is partially stimulating that opioid receptor in the brain, satisfying the need for using. So it satisfies the brain, and it has the capacity to block as well. Yes. And then the last medication that we use in opioid addiction is something called naltrexone, and it comes in two forms, a pill and a once-a-month injection.
Yes.
And so they all kind of work in the same neighborhood in the brain, but they kind of work on different sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. Naltrexone or Vivitrol blocks completely the effects of opioids. So this may be something that somebody would want to desire if they want to be off all kind of opioid stimulating medications. Right. The big difference is you have to be completely detoxed from opioids if you want the naltrexone.
Yes.
Because it'll throw you into withdrawal, and that's not a good thing.
Right. Yeah. So I guess if someone is off of opioids and then they're on naltrexone, part of the idea that they can use heroin and not get high? I mean, it won't be fun.
No, it won't be fun because it's blocking the receptor.
Right.
And so the idea is if there is a relapse, you're protected.
Yes.
But there are situations where, people want to get high even though they are on a blocker like naltrexone. Mm-hmm. And especially with these powerful synthetic opioids, you can you can overdose with large doses of these powerful opioids despite being on a medication. So that's why we have to, do psychotherapy and education and make them aware that there's still a risk for overdose and death despite being on these you know, fantastic medications.
Yeah, yeah. So the medications can be a big help.
But yes.
All by themselves, they're not going to cure you. And I guess part of the reason for that is sometimes they don't want to be cured, or they might have mixed feelings about that.
Well, you know, again, going back to the lizard brain doesn't want to stop having fun. So
right.
It tells the wizard brain, hey, don't worry about it. You can do it, you know, and then the... Yeah. And then,
meanwhile, their life is falling apart.
Yeah.
And their heart stops off and on.
Yeah.
Addiction is not logical. So to apply the logical world to it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
So it's important to make sure that we're putting the parameters on it that apply to it.
Yeah.
So by saying, oh, well, don't you see that you've, you know, isolated your family, that you've lost your job, that you've lost your income. Yes, those are all things, but those aren't going to make any movement in the patient unless they're ready. And so making sure that we can get them through that detox. And then once we've got them detoxed, we can really start talking about how are we going to keep you better? How do we keep you to a place where you don't have to go through that painful withdrawal again?
Yeah,
and that's where therapy comes in place, as well as psychiatric care. So making sure that if you started this process because you wanted to numb your pain, let's make sure that your pain is being stabilized instead of running away again.
Oh, yeah. And maybe talk about their pain, too. You know, like what else is going on in their life that might have pushed them toward becoming addicted, too.
Correct. Their emotional pain as well as their physical pain.
Yeah. So, and I guess a lot of that is also conversations with the patient's family and friends and things like that, too. So,
absolutely. Yeah. This is not something that affects one person. It affects their entire network of individuals. So it's important to make sure that not just the patient gets well, but that everybody around that patient gets well.
Right.
That means making sure that people are all on the same page. A lot of times family members don't understand, and it's important to give them the support that they need so that they can get well and they can talk about boundaries. They can talk about what's supportive. How can the family member that you're trying to reach, how can you reach them instead of causing a lot of walls being taken up?
Yeah. Because they talk a lot about you kind of, even if there's just one addicted person, you kind of have to treat the whole family. And it's become a cliche, but I think it's true. You know, it's true because, you know, typically you see someone who's addicted will, you know, their mom or their boyfriend or their girlfriend or whatever is the one really suffering that has to deal with all this.
Correct. So, usually the patient is not always the most uncomfortable in the situation. So it's important to make sure that we try to alleviate as much as we can of that uncomfortability. And again, the idea is that we all work ourselves out of business.
Right.
It would be a wonderful thing if we could all work ourselves out of business.
Yeah. What a wonderful world if you guys could go out of business because you weren't needed anymore.
That would be fantastic.
Gosh. Yeah. So what would you do if you went out of business?
I have no idea.
I would sell masks.
You would sell masks?
Make a killing.
And toilet paper.
Toilet paper,
masks
yes.
A mask and toilet paper tycoon.
That's right.
That sounds awesome. How about you, Ashley? What would you do?
You know, I'd probably invest in Lysol.
In Lysol? Yeah, that sounds good. Well, to dream the impossible dream, but I guess... But for now, I think there are plenty of people with bad problems.
Yeah, a lot of work
addiction.
To do still. Yep.
Yeah, a lot of work to do. So if people are out there who need help with addiction, I'll throw this question to you, Ashley. Can you? We're running kind of short on time, so no pressure. But can you tell people how they can contact InSynergy and tell us just a little bit about the InSynergy Alcohol and Drug Rehabilitation Program?
Sure. InSynergy, we have someone on a clinical staff member available 24 hours a day to be able to address concerns, talk about questions, and we have same day and next day appointments available. So you can reach out to us via email. We have a scheduling on our website, and then you can call or text our line directly. The website is www.insynergystl.com. That's InSynergyStl.com, or you can reach us at 314-649-STOP.
All right.
That's good, too.
Yeah, good to know. So thank you very much. So we'll be back in just a little bit. So we just finished talking about the opioid epidemic and InSynergy Alcohol and Drug Treatment Program, and we'll be back.
You're listening to...
We're back. This is the Medical Beat. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. We've been here with Dr. Taka and Ashley Hawker talking about the opioid epidemic, and we're going to do something different, and we're going to have these guys stay with us and join in the conversation. The topic that's really on everybody's mind, of course, as you know, is what is that? Oh, the coronavirus epidemic, COVID-19.
Actually, it's a pandemic. Do you know the difference?
A pandemic. Oh, tell us the difference, Dr. Taka.
Other than the spelling, of course, the pandemic, it's kind of geographical. So I guess if you're an epidemiologist, there are things that are described as outbreaks.
Yeah.
Where there's kind of signals in different places, and then it becomes an epidemic, usually one country, and then or a big region of a country, and then we have the pandemic, and then the pandemic involves many nations or worldwide. So it's graduated to be a pandemic.
Right. Pandemic is bigger and worse than
bigger
epidemic.
Bigger and worse, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know exactly what the criteria are, but I know the World Health Organization has very specific criteria, and I guess the coronavirus outbreak, the coronavirus thing has crossed that threshold, so it's now technically a pandemic.
Correct. I think the only continent that doesn't have a case is Antarctica, I believe.
Last I heard, I think that's true, unless that's changed since last time we checked.
Yeah.
But not a whole lot of... They do social isolation real well.
I know. They're the experts down there.
they got that social distancing thing down real good. So they might be, that might be a pretty safe place to go.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about one thing that makes people less safe from the coronavirus pandemic. And that thing is fake cures. Did you guys know there's some fake cures floating around out there?
Oh no! I just ordered some from online. You mean I'm wasting my money?
Yeah, yes, you are, Dr. Taka.
My gosh.
Which, yes. So, yeah, and I think it's kind of sad, really. But one of the fake cures that's gotten more publicity recently is a silver colloid solution. Basically, it's a solution with tiny, tiny particles of silver, kind of suspended in a solution, which has been sold in the past for all sorts of things. But currently, the former televangelist and convicted felon, Jimmy Baker, is selling that. Formerly served in prison for fraud, and now he's at it again. For $125, you can get his silver colloid solution. So some science groups were calling him out on making totally fake claims about the silver colloid.
People in town that have certification, been trained, oftentimes doing it alone can get you so far. So search for somebody who's got training. Right now, there are. It is standard care that that we offer medication-assisted therapies to keep people from relapse. Mm-hmm. So there are a few different medications that are FDA approved, and we'll go through a few of them. The first one is an old drug called methadone, and you're basically replacing the old illegal drug with a replacement opioid, mm-hmm. and it's got some advantages because it's longer acting and it's been around. We've got a long history relationship with methadone. It's considered safe and standard of care in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. After that, another drug called buprenorphine was developed, and that is partially stimulating that opioid receptor in the brain, satisfying the need for using. So it satisfies the brain, mm-hmm. and it has the capacity to block as well. Yes. And then the last medication that we use in opioid addiction is something called naltrexone, and it comes in two forms, a pill and a once-a-month injection.
Yes.
And so they all kind of work in the same neighborhood in the brain, but they kind of work on different sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. Naltrexone or Vivitrol blocks completely the effects of opioids. So this may be something somebody would want to desire if they want to be off all kind of opioid stimulating medications. Right. The big difference is you have to be completely detoxed from opioids if you want the naltrexone.
Yes.
Because it'll throw you into withdrawal, and that's not a good thing.
Right. So I guess if someone is off of opioids and then they're on naltrexone, part of the idea that they can use heroin and not get high? I mean, that they just won't. It won't be fun.
No, it won't be fun because it's blocking the receptor.
Right.
And so the idea is, if there is a relapse, you're protected.
Yes.
But there are situations where people want to get high even though they are on a blocker like naltrexone, and especially with these powerful synthetic opioids, you can overdose with large doses of these powerful opioids despite being on a medication. So that's why we have to, do psychotherapy and education and make them aware that there's still a risk for overdose and death despite being on these, fantastic medications.
Yeah. So the medications can be a big help.
Yes.
All by themselves, they're not going to cure you. And I guess part of the reason for that is sometimes they don't want to be cured, or they might have mixed feelings about that.
Well, again, going back to the lizard brain doesn't want to stop having fun. So it tells the wizard brain, hey, don't worry about it. You can do it, and then
meanwhile, their life is falling apart.
Yeah.
And their heart stops off and on.
Addiction is not logical. So to apply the logical world to it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
So it's important to make sure that we're putting the parameters on it that apply to it.
Yeah.
So by saying, oh, well, don't you see that you've, isolated your family, that you've lost your job, that you've lost your income. Yes, those are all things, but those aren't going to make any movement in the patient unless they're ready. Making sure that we can get them through that detox. And then once we've got them detoxed, we can really start talking about, how are we going to keep you better? How do we keep you to a place where you don't have to go through that painful withdrawal again?
And that's
where therapy comes in place, as well as psychiatric care. So making sure that if you started this process because you wanted to numb your pain, let's make sure that your pain is being stabilized instead of running away again.
Oh, yeah. And maybe talk about their pain, too. Like what else is going on in their life that might have pushed them toward becoming addicted, too.
Correct. Their emotional pain as well as their physical pain.
Yeah. So, and I guess a lot of that is also conversations with the patient's family and friends and things like that, too. So,
absolutely. Yeah. This is not something that affects one person. It affects their entire network of individuals. So it's important to make sure that not just the patient gets well, but that everybody around that patient gets well.
Right.
That means making sure that people are all on the same page. A lot of times family members don't understand, and it's important to give them the support that they need so that they can get well and they can talk about boundaries. They can talk about what's supportive. How can the family member that you're trying to reach, how can you reach them instead of causing a lot of walls being taken up?
Yeah. Because they talk a lot about you kind of, even if there's just one addicted person, you kind of have to treat the whole family. And it's become a cliche, but I think it's true. It's true because, typically someone who's addicted will, their mom or their boyfriend or their girlfriend or whatever is the one really suffering that has to deal with all this.
Correct. So, usually the patient is not always the most uncomfortable in the situation. So it's important to make sure that we try to alleviate as much as we can of that uncomfortability. And again, the idea is that we all work ourselves out of business.
Right.
It would be a wonderful thing if we could all work ourselves out of business.
Yeah. What a wonderful world if you guys could go out of business because you weren't needed anymore.
That would be fantastic.
Gosh. Yeah. So what would you do if you went out of business?
I have no idea.
I would sell masks.
You would sell masks?
Make a killing.
And toilet paper.
Toilet paper,
A mask and toilet paper tycoon.
That's right.
That sounds awesome. How about you, Ashley? What would you do?
I'd probably invest in Lysol.
In Lysol? Yeah, that sounds good. Well, to dream the impossible dream, but I guess... But for now, I think there are plenty of people with bad problems.
Yeah, a lot of work
addiction.
To do still. Yep.
Yeah, a lot of work to do. So if people are out there who need help with addiction, could, and I'll throw this question to you, Ashley. Can you Oh, and we're running kind of short on time, so no pressure, but can you tell people how they can contact InSynergy and tell us just a little bit about the InSynergy Alcohol and Drug Rehabilitation Program?
Sure. InSynergy, we have someone on a clinical staff member available 24 hours a day to be able to address concerns, talk about questions, and we have same day and next day appointments available. So you can reach out to us via email. We have a scheduling on our website, and then you can call or text our line directly. The website is www.insynergystl.com. That's InSynergyStl.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can reach us at 314-649-STOP.
All Ooh, right.
That's good, too.
Yeah, good to know. So thank you very much. So we'll be back in just a little bit. So we just finished talking about the opioid epidemic and InSynergy Alcohol and Drug Treatment Program, and we'll be back.
You're listening to the...
We're back. This is the Medical Beat. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. We've been here with Dr. Taka and Ashley Hawker talking about the opioid epidemic. And we're going to do something different. And we're going to have these guys stay with us and join in the conversation. The topic that's really on everybody's mind, of course, as you know, is... What is that? Oh, the coronavirus epidemic, COVID-19.
Actually, it's a pandemic. Do you know the difference?
A pandemic. Oh, tell us the difference, Dr. Taka.
Other than the spelling, of course, the pandemic, it's kind of geographical. So I guess if you're an epidemiologist, there are things that are described as outbreaks.
Yeah.
Where there's kind of signals in different places, and then it becomes an epidemic, usually one country, and then or a big region of a country, and then we have the pandemic, and then the pandemic involves many nations or worldwide. So it's graduated to be a pandemic.
Right. Pandemic is bigger and worse than
bigger
epidemic.
Bigger and worse, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know exactly what the criteria are, but I know the World Health Organization has very specific criteria, and I guess the coronavirus outbreak, the coronavirus thing has crossed that threshold, so it's now technically a pandemic.
Correct. I think the only continent that doesn't have a case is Antarctica, I believe.
I think that's true, unless that's changed since last time we checked.
Yeah.
But not a whole lot of... They do social isolation real well.
I know. They're the experts down there.
they got that social distancing thing down real good. So that might be a pretty safe place to go.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about one thing that makes people less safe from the coronavirus pandemic. And that thing is fake cures. Did you guys know there's some fake cures floating around out there?
Oh no! I just ordered some from online. You mean I'm wasting my money?
Yeah, yes, you are, Dr. Taka.
My gosh.
Which, yes. I think it's kind of sad, really. But one of the fake cures that's gotten more publicity recently is a silver colloid solution. Basically, it's a solution with tiny, tiny particles of silver, kind of suspended in a solution, which has been sold in the past for all sorts of things. But currently, the former televangelist and convicted felon, Jimmy Baker, is selling that. Formerly served in prison for fraud, and now he's at it again. For $125, you can get his silver colloid solution. So some science groups were calling him out on making totally fake claims about the silver colloid solution. And recently, a lawsuit's been filed by the Attorney General of Missouri. So, yay, Missouri.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of surprised Missouri is the one that took this one up, I would expect.
Well, no, of course not. Yeah. We're the show me state. Show me the data.
Show me the data.
Right? Where's the data?
Yeah. And the data shows that it does not cure coronavirus.
Oh,
yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. And I guess the other one, there's actually many, but another one is Alex Jones. Alex Jones of InfoWars has been selling a supplement and claiming, as I understand it, I think his website has all these disclaimers like, oh, no, we're not saying this cures anything. But on the air, he said that it cures coronavirus. So he's in trouble for that.
Terrible. He's taking advantage of the situation like some, you know.
Right.
Well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Not good.
Right, not good. Now, and I think what bothers me the most is that both of these are people who have loyal followings, who have a lot of people trust them, so they're easy to rip off.
Yeah.
You know, I think they, when you have a trusted following and then you rip people off, there's a...
And I doubt there's refunds.
I don't think there's refunds.
I'm sure that's really big on the bottom of that receipt you're going to get in the mail.
Right, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah. And there's other things, too. There's like bleach solutions, which can kill you, sold to for coronavirus. Also some aromatherapy. Places have claimed it'll help with coronavirus, some essential oils that falsely claim it can help with coronavirus. So just to be clear, right now there is nothing, zero, nada, nothing that can treat coronavirus. It's all supportive care. It's all, you know.
That's right.
Get you through it until your body gets rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no vaccine yet either. That's probably a couple years away. But there is nothing. There's no medicine, no treatment for coronavirus. And if anyone tries to sell you something for that, then they're ripping you off. Yeah. What's that?
Run away if somebody's trying to sell you something.
Run away. Yeah. So, and I guess just, you know, for us three as healthcare providers, you know, we're busting our rears trying to make a buck, doing things, you know, to try to help people. And then there's these fraudsters selling stuff for $125 a pop. How does that make you feel, Ashley Hawker?
Well, I think that the reality is that we just have to be very careful about just knowing what we're doing and how we're going to be,
be
assessing the situation. Just think smart. I mean, honestly, I just think that we have to be careful about getting too hysterical and not fact checking. I mean, let's be real. We all fact check the president every time he gets on the air. We need to fact check every time that we're trying to purchase something as well.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. But I guess a lot of people just aren't fact checking, I don't think.
Yeah, I just think we just have to be careful and cautious. And don't worry, there's still toilet paper somewhere.
Somewhere. I don't know about that one.
I'm sure it's somewhere. It's probably in a warehouse somewhere.
In a secret government warehouse.
Next to the aliens.
Next to the aliens. Right. And the Lysol.
The Lysol.
Yeah. So how about you, Dr. Taka? How does this thing make you feel?
Well, I think we have to educate our patients. I mean, put in place some... you know, reasonable precautions, keep clean, wash your hands several times a day, use a lot of soap, stop touching your face, don't cough on your friends, things like that. And
I'm just kidding.
Oh my gosh, I'm out of here. I'm infected.
Oh no, we have to be in here for the next 14 days.
Oh gosh.
And we're taping in the small room.
Oh, quarantine.
Dang it.
Quarantine with Dr. Harvey. Oh my goodness. Yeah, we just have to educate. And the reality is people who may get this virus, many of the people will survive it. There are at risk.
Most.
Yeah. Many are at risk, like the elderly. They have different immune systems, and sometimes they can have more respiratory problems than healthy middle-aged or even children. People, you know, but with that being said, children always have to be, protected and reminded how to stay clean. The interesting thing about the coronavirus is the children are somehow, you know, they have a more, they're, I guess there's a bigger signal with the elderly having bad outcome.
Right.
So that's an interesting place for research. They're wondering why the children are not getting.
They're not getting nearly as sick.
Which is kind of counterintuitive, but they're studying it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one thing that crosses my mind is, you know, a lot of people, you hear people say a lot of times you hear people say, oh, you know, it, you know, mostly the bad outcomes are in people who are immunocompromised or they're 70 or older, you know, So it's not an actual problem. I'm not worried about it. And it's like, okay, think about that, because the people who are over 70, the people who are immunocompromised, and there's a lot of those people around, they can hear you say that.
True.
Hear you say that.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who are very vulnerable. So when people don't take precautions for themselves, they're endangering other people.
Indeed.
And
well said.
I have feelings about that also. You know, so yeah, but, you know, just as a, and kind of circling back to the topic of fake cures, I think, you know, as physicians, one of the, or just as any healthcare provider, one of the first principles is do no harm. You know, I mean, we try to help people, but, you know, for crying out loud, don't do bad things to people. And these fake cures do bad things to people. It's robbing them of money and keeping them away from actual help, keeping them away from being tested, keeping them away from, you know, possibly going to the hospital if things go south.
True.
So there's a lot to be said for that. But anyway, hey, it was fun to have
you
guys with
us.
Thank you, Dr. Harvey.
You're very welcome. So In Synergy, Alcohol and Drug Rehab Program. In Synergy, spelled with an I-N-S at the beginning, In Synergy. And it was just a great conversation today. We talked about all sorts of things. And we'll be back. Ciao.
Use the Radio Rewind and you can hear it all at radio.com.
Oh, yes. Good to know.
The pandemic.
I say,
do you
yes,
know the difference?
The pandemic. Oh, tell us the difference, Dr. Tocca.
Other than the spelling, of course, the pandemic, it's kind of geographical. So I guess if you're an epidemiologist, there are things that are described as outbreaks.
Yeah.
Where there's kind of signals in different places, and then it becomes an epidemic, usually one country, and then or a big region of a country. And then we have the pandemic, and then the pandemic involves many nations or worldwide. It's graduated to be a pandemic.
Right. Pandemic is bigger and worse than
bigger
epidemic.
Bigger and worse, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know exactly what the criteria are, but I know the World Health Organization has very specific criteria, and I guess the coronavirus outbreak, the coronavirus thing has crossed that threshold, so it's now technically a pandemic.
Correct. I think the only continent that doesn't have a case is Antarctica, I believe.
I think that's true. Unless that's changed since last time we checked.
Yeah.
But not a whole lot of... They do social isolation real well.
I know. They're the experts down there.
they got that social distancing thing down real good. So they might be... That might be a pretty safe place to go.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about one thing that makes people less safe from the coronavirus pandemic, and that thing is fake cures. Did you guys know there's some fake cures floating around out there?
Oh no! I just ordered some from online. You mean I'm wasting my money?
Yeah. Yes, you are, Dr. Tocca.
My gosh.
Which, yes. I think it's kind of sad, really. But one of the fake cures that's gotten more publicity recently is a silver colloid solution. Basically, it's a solution with tiny, tiny particles of silver, kind of suspended in a solution, which has been sold in the past for all sorts of things, but currently the former televangelist and convicted felon Jimmy Baker is selling that. Formerly served in prison for fraud, and now he's at it again. For $125, you can get his silver colloid solution. So some science groups were calling him out on making totally fake claims about the silver colloid solution. And recently, a lawsuit's been filed by the Attorney General of Missouri. So yay, Missouri.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of surprised Missouri is the one that took this one up, I would expect.
Well, no, of course not. Yeah. We're the show me state. Show me the data.
Right, show me the data.
Right? Where's the data?
Yeah. And the data shows that it does not cure coronavirus.
Oh,
yeah,
goodness.
Yeah. And I guess the other one, there's actually many, but another one is Alex Jones. Alex Jones of InfoWars has been selling a supplement. and claiming, as I understand it, I think his website has all these disclaimers like, oh, no, we're not saying this cures anything. But on the air, he said that it cures coronavirus. So he's in trouble for that.
Terrible. He's taking advantage of the situation like some, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Not good.
Right. Not good. And I think what bothers me the most is that both of these are people who have loyal followings, who have a lot of people trust them. So they're easy to rip off.
Yeah.
You know, I think they, when you have a trusted following and then you rip people off, there's a...
And I doubt there's refunds.
I don't think there's refunds.
I'm sure that's really big on the bottom of that receipt you're going to get in the mail.
Right. I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah. And there's other things too. There's like bleach solutions, which can kill you, sold to, for coronavirus. Also some aromatherapy. Places have claimed it'll help with coronavirus, some essential oils that falsely claim it can help with coronavirus. So just to be clear, right now there is nothing, zero, nada, nothing that can treat coronavirus. It's all supportive care. It's all, you know.
That's right.
Get you through it until your body gets rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no vaccine yet either. That's probably a couple years away. But there is nothing. There's no medicine, no treatment for coronavirus. And if anyone tries to sell you something for that, then they're ripping you off. Yeah. What's that?
Run away if somebody's trying to sell you something.
Run away. Yeah. So, and I guess just, you know, for us three as healthcare providers, you know, we're busting our rears trying to make a buck, doing things, you know, to try to help people. And then there's these fraudsters selling stuff for $125 a pop. How does that make you feel, Ashley Hawker?
Well, I think that the reality is that we just have to be very careful about just knowing what we're doing and how we're going to be assessing the situation. Just think smart. I mean, honestly, I just think that we have to be careful about getting too hysterical and not fast fact checking. I mean, let's be real. We all fact check the president every time he gets on the air. We need to fact check every time that we're trying to purchase something as well.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. But I guess a lot of people just aren't fact checking, I don't think.
Yeah, I just think we just have to be careful and cautious. And don't worry, there's still toilet paper somewhere.
Somewhere. I don't know about that one.
I'm sure it's somewhere. It's probably in a warehouse somewhere.
In a secret government warehouse.
Next to the aliens.
Next to the aliens. Right. And the Lysol.
The Lysol.
Yeah.
So how about you, Dr. Taka? How does this thing make you feel?
Well, I think we have to educate our patients. I mean, put in place some... reasonable precautions, keep clean, wash your hands several times a day, use a lot of soap, stop touching your face, don't cough on your friends, things like that. And
I'm just kidding.
Oh, my gosh. I'm out of here. I'm infected.
Oh, no. We have to be in here for the next 14 days.
Oh, gosh.
And we're taping in the small room.
Oh, quarantine.
Dang it.
Quarantine with Dr. Harvey. Oh, my goodness. we just have to educate. And the reality is people who may get this virus, many of the people will survive it. There are at risk.
Most.
Yeah. Many are at risk, like the elderly. They have different immune systems, and sometimes they can have more respiratory problems than a healthy middle age or even children. People, you know, but with that being said, children always have to be, protected and reminded how to stay clean. The interesting thing about the coronavirus is the children are somehow, they have I guess there's a bigger signal with the elderly having bad outcome.
Right.
So that's an interesting place for research. They're wondering why the children are not getting...
They're not getting nearly as sick.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Which is kind of counterintuitive, but they're studying it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one thing that crosses my mind is, a lot of people, you hear people say a lot of times you hear people say, mostly the bad outcomes are in people who are immunocompromised or they're 70 or older, So it's not an actual problem. I'm not worried about it. And it's like, okay, think about that, because the people who are over 70, the people who are immunocompromised, and there's a lot of those people around, they can hear you say that.
True.
Right? Exactly.
Right.
True,
they can hear you say that.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who are very vulnerable. So when people don't take precautions for themselves, they're endangering other people.
Indeed. Indeed.
And
well said.
I have feelings about that also. You know, so yeah, but you know, just as a, and kind of circling back to the topic of fake cures, I think, you know, as physicians, one of the, or just as any healthcare provider, one of the first principles is do no harm. You know, I mean, we try to help people, but you know, for crying out loud, don't do bad things to people. And these fake cures do bad things to people. It's robbing them of money and keeping them away from actual help, keeping them away from being tested, keeping them away from, you know, possibly going to the hospital if things go south.
True.
Things
true,
like that.
True.
So there's a lot to be said for that. But anyway, hey, it was fun to have
you
guys
you, Dr.
with
Harvey.
Us.
Thank you, Dr. Harvey.
You're very welcome. So in Synergy, Alcohol and Drug Rehab Program, in Synergy, spelled with an I-N-S at the beginning, in Synergy. And it was just a great conversation today. We talked about all sorts of things. And we'll be back. Ciao.
Use the Radio Rewind and you can hear it all at radio.com.
Oh, yes. Good to know.